B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. Hey, I don't know if I've ever been around the game of golf when there's just been so much junk going on. We got players griping about rules. We got rules makers griping about players. We got newspapers insulting players who win $1.3 million championships. And y'all, that was just on Sunday and Monday. We'll talk about this and a whole lot more with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer as he's down in Florida for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Also, this past Monday saw the playing of the year's unofficial first major, the Seminole Pro Member. A year ago, we talked to our friend Taylor Zarzer from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio about this event as he was down there covering it. It's kind of unbelievable. And we'll wrap things up by talking with another golf fanatic from the world of country music, Clay Walker. But first up, Ron Green Jr. Ron, more than anything, what I'm missing this week is an Arnold Palmer press conference. It seems now more than ever to me that the void of the head steward of the game, the statesman, the spokesperson from the game, is bigger and more noticeable than ever. I'm just going to go down a quick list, and it's going to take a while before I even get to the winner of the Honda last week of the big stories. We had a player, Alex Chayka, DQ'd for an outdated rules book. We had Ricky Fowler, for really the first time in his career, making a misstep, in my opinion, and acting petulant with a drop. We have USGA antagonizing a player openly. We have Charles Schwartzel and a rules official going head-to-head. And then finally, we get to Keith Mitchell pulling off an amazing victory and rewarded by being called a no-name golfer in a newspaper. What in the hell's going on in the game of golf, Ron?
It's noisy, isn't it? It's, a lot. I think it was interesting this week when Jay Monahan, the tour commissioner, put out that memo to the players basically detailing or reviewing the process of how we got to where we are with the rules and reminding them, you know, we had 7 years at the table. We were part of this. Our representatives took your recommendations, and almost every one of them were adopted into the new rules. They're not changing, at least not at the moment. So live with it. It's interesting. Some of the really top players have been like Rory and Tiger, and I'm like, you just got to make an adjustment. Other guys have made it a little more of an issue. I mean, I've been surprised by how some of this has come off. I think they did their best with Monahan's letter, which I understand came at the urging of the leaders of the big golf ruling organizations, said, you need to get your guys to pipe down. We're trying to make this thing work. Hopefully that sort of tamps it down a little bit and we can get back to the business of golf. Professional golf, you're going to have moments where rules or quirky things come into play, but this just been, it's just like static on the radio the whole time. There's always something going on. You can't quite get the clarity you want to just make it about the golf. What Keith Mitchell last week did was just, that's a heck of a story. Headline aside, he was great about the headline.
Great. Make sure you get my name right on the check, which is the exact answer you give.
Right. And he, it's funny. I had a premonition as he was looking at that putt thinking, all right, he's going to make this one. I don't know why, but that time I happened to be right. But, I think at least here it's getting back to golf. And that's, it's no secret that the tour's biggest event of the year, the Players' Championship is next week. And they don't want the rules to be the story of the week at the Players' Championship. So maybe we've sort of moved past it a little bit. I think it will be interesting to see if down the road, as they've had time to let this thing sort of play out, what adjustments they make. I expect they're going to make an adjustment or two. I don't know what those are, but I think they might. I think it's, in this case, it may be sort of like Augusta National. They pretty much got everything right, but they're always going to continue to work on it, massage it here and there. Maybe that's what's going to happen with the rules. I don't know, but I will be relieved if we could just get through a quiet week.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Staying with the rules just for a second, there's two things of antagonism that have struck me. I don't know who the intern was that was handling the email for the USGA, but I just couldn't believe the USGA and that tweet they sent out, basically calling out Justin Thomas, and then they quickly had to walk it back a day or two later. But the other thing, and this is on the PGA players end of it, and not the players, but the PGA rules officials, this ambiguous whether someone is lining someone up or standing behind them, it seems almost they're looking to antagonize, because I have not seen an instance in my life on the PGA Tour where I felt like a caddy was lining someone up. I see it on the LPGA every week, but I never saw it on the PGA Tour. And now it's being called on a constant basis if someone just happens to walk by while someone's hitting a shot. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think, first of all, the USGA tweet, that was unfortunate. I can tell you it was not an intern. It was somebody who should have known better. But I think it spoke to the frustration level. And, you know, they had to walk it back. But then I was told from somebody who knows that, yes, in fact, two meetings were canceled. But what do you mean by meeting? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
He said, but anyway. It was not a good look on any part.
No.
On either side. And then, you know, I mean, knowing some of the rules officials really well, they are not antagonistic, not going to be. But I think in the case of the situation last week, I mean, there's photographic evidence that while it was unintentional, intent is not part of the rule. I mean, you can't be back there. So if you're going to enforce the rules, you got to enforce that one. As I always say, I don't intend to hit the ball out of bounds. But when I do, I have to pay the penalty for it. Intent is not part of most of these rules. You have to, you know, operate by the rules and play by them. And if you don't, that's where the penalty comes. And I'm sure they were like, geez, we don't want to do this. But, I mean.
Well, but haven't they opened this can of worms by including the word intent in the most monumental change of the last few years, which is the anchored putter? They're allowing guys to cheat just by saying, I didn't intend to anchor. So if you're going to allow that, you either need to get rid of the word intent altogether, or you need to include it in all these changes, don't you?
I don't think they allow guys. I don't think those guys are anchoring. I think it looks like they're very close, but I think they've been very careful with those. And yeah, I know what you're saying. You want to eliminate, when you're dealing with any of these kind of rules things, you want black and white. I thought Rory said it so wonderfully, as he has a knack for doing. He said, I've never seen a sport that it gets so tangled up with its own rules. And that's sort of what it feels like. And, you know, I obviously was spurred by what happened and the changes and the adjustments that have or have not been made by players and everybody. But it just and it feels like, I don't know, when you get in a rainy pattern and you just want it to be dry for a few days, but more rain keeps coming in, it feels like that's where we are right now with the rules thing.
Enough rules. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer.
But I will raise the question, what if Augusta put fat flag sticks in for the Masters this year? I mean, that's just, you know, people, that's just where we are at this point. People say, you think they would do that? I mean, Augusta will be the most, you know, proper it can be, but I just somebody's throwing that out, and that would just add another log to the fire.
Oh, Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Anytime the tournament goes to Bay Hill, I think this is now the third year without his presence. Like I said, opening up this conversation, damn, I miss Arnie. I think he would have already squelched all of this stuff a long time ago. But do you still feel his presence at this tournament and in the way it's handled?
For sure. I think what they have done, and you're right, this is the third one since he passed away. There was a lot of speculation or concern or conjecture about what was going to happen. Are players going to quit coming? Obviously, it's a hard golf course. It doesn't fit everybody's list of their favorite places to play, but a lot of guys really love it. But there was talk, are the top guys going to quit coming? Is it going to as we've seen happen to the Byron Nelson, become sort of a victim of not having his presence here anymore. But not at all. I mean, there's almost a sense of momentum here of what they've done with the Arnold Palmer experience. I mean, just everywhere you go, there's almost literal reminders of him. I mean, out on the edge of the practice, they have his bag set up there at his favorite spot where he had balls for years. But near there, they've got, this area of those red, yellow, green, and white umbrellas that, his logo and all that. There, obviously you walk in the golf shop or whatever, there's giant Arnie hats and all that stuff. And everywhere around it, his presence is still felt here. I mean, you can't miss the giant statue and all that. And I think what Sam Saunders, Amy Saunders, and the others have done is take this thing and try to shepherd it into, the next iteration, understanding what they've lost was just the most enormous loss golf could take, but doesn't mean it has to end. And I think they've done a really, really good job. They've got a great field. They're just a particularly good spot on the schedule now with the Players' Championship next week. I mean, it pretty much assures guys are going to keep coming here to play because it's a great doubleheader. I mean, that does not help Valspar 2 weeks from now or Honda last week. And I'm sure with Honda's sponsorship coming up in a couple of years, they're probably going to have a conversation like, wait a minute, we've been here for 38, 39 years, and how come suddenly we're in the spot where it doesn't fit anybody's schedule? But for the time being, I mean, it's really good down here. I mean, the weather has turned off beautifully for them. It's going to be a great weekend. And, I think it's a very positive vibe down here. Arnie would be happy.
Ron, there's a lot of noise and BS in and around the world of golf when Tiger Woods withdraws from the tournament with neck pain, and it is as quiet as it has been. That was a shockwave for me. It was the big red flag, uh-oh, is this it? What's the vibe in the press room regarding Tiger Woods?
I don't think it's great concern. I think it was surprise because I don't think anybody saw it coming. And so, yeah, there's naturally an element of like, hey, what's going on here? And given his history and, he's had his injury issues. And necks and backs are not separated by very great distances, though where his back issue was well away from there. But I don't know. I think all indications are he's going to play the Players' Championship, and he was just being extra cautious. So I don't know. I mean, if he is not at the Players, then suddenly you think, uh-oh, what's he going to do? But my expectation is he's going to be back for the Players. He's going to take a week off. Then he's going to play the Dell Technologies match play in Austin and next stop Augusta because, he wants to get some rounds in and play some tournaments before Augusta to give himself one more chance down there. But, I mean, I think I don't think there's any sense of urgency right now about it.
Do you think he's playing the match play because he WD'd this week? Because if there was a tournament between now and the Masters that I thought he would avoid like the plague, it's that tournament in Austin, the match play, because of how much you have to play over a short period of time.
Well, again, and he is not committed to that. I mean, maybe he goes back to Valspar where he played well last year, and had a chance there. So it's just speculative, but I know he has told some players that he's looking forward to the match play because he loves playing match play. You can go out there and maybe you only play three rounds and you don't play 18 holes every round. I think the good problem to have is maybe you have to play whatever it is, seven rounds over 5 days, but that means you're playing for the title and you could probably make the adjustments you need with a week off after that to be ready. That's what I would expect him to do. WGC, all the world points and all that, those are the things he points toward. So, I could see it not being the one you thought he would play, but it'd be interesting to see what not playing here at Bay Hill does to his schedule.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. The Players' Championship moves back to March next week, where it moved away because of weather. And I bet there's just a handful of players left who are eligible to play the Players next week who remember it when it was in March. It's a completely different golf course. The wind is different. Have players gone down and done some scouting, played the course in March to see the differences?
I don't think they do that like they would go to Augusta. I think we hear about so much of it with Augusta because, it's Augusta, and those guys, like the rest of us, hey, I get a chance to go play Augusta, I'm going to go take advantage of it. I think they're familiar enough with the stadium course, that they're not doing that. I think you're right. It's a totally different time of year, different setup. If they get the weather that is predicted right now, which is not much rain and nice mid-70s temperatures, I think it could be ideal. The firm, fast, play the golf course firm and fast like they like. I'm thrilled that it's going back there. Not that I was already grown up before this thing really got its feet under it, but I liked it much better in March. It seemed to fit there. It seemed to be the big sort of kickoff in a lot of ways to the season. You have more fact, you know, when they played in May, it was already summertime there. It was hot. It was sticky. So it changed the golf course a little bit. And I just think there are more variables to it when they play it in March. And I think I think it just enhances it. And I think you know, here we go. I mean, we've been talking about the four majors with the new lineup they got, and now what the Players does to it. It takes off now this season, and we're just now getting to springtime, but we're going to be at the end of summer before you know what it'll feel like, because it seems like there's big stuff all the time. I mean, they'll be coming to see us in Charlotte in another couple months.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, we take you inside the golf season's first unofficial major as we revisit Taylor Zarzur taking dead aim at the Seminole Pro Member, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. This past Monday, the season's unofficial first major, the Seminole Pro Member, took place down in Florida. This is an amazing and unique event going back decades. And last year, we talked with our friend Taylor Zarzur as he covered it for SiriusXM. Taylor, I know that you're close with Bob Ford, the pro at Seminole, and I think you've been down there a couple of years in the past, but I saw pictures on Instagram the other day of you with a microphone, and I just wrote down a couple of names that were in the field at the season's unofficial first major, the Seminole pro member. See if I have this right. Dustin Johnson, who didn't even tee it up at the Honda. Justin Thomas, who won the Honda. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, Greg Norman, who only tees it up about twice a year, I think, Curtis Strange, and some guy named Jack Nicklaus. And I'm sure you're about to tell me that I'm leaving out at least another 20 of the top 50 in the world and four or five Hall of Famers.
Yeah, did you say Rory?
Yes, I had Rory in there.
Yeah, Daniel Berger. Yeah, it's crazy the field that they have each and every year at that event. And Bob is become a dear friend of mine, and he is the most respected club professional in this country, and it's because of the way that he treats people, and it's just so neat to see on the first tee the level of the respect that he commands. And there's no media that's there. The only reason I'm there is because I do a radio show on SiriusXM with Bob, and Bob tells all these people as we're standing on the first tee, hey, we're going to grab you for a few seconds, and Taylor's going to ask you some questions. And Bob, like, just looks like a proud father, like, watching me do this, almost rarely asking questions. And even when what was hilarious was Patrick Cantlay, who has about nothing to say, when we were done, says, man, Bob, you have a lot to say. And Bob deadpans and looks at him and says, speak for yourself, Patrick. it's an amazing day, and that golf course is my favorite golf course to play. If I had to play one of the greatest golf courses every day in this country, that would be the one I would pick. I wouldn't want to play Cypress or Augusta or Pine Valley every day, because I would just shoot 200 each time, and I'd get a little frustrated with the difficulty. And make no mistake, Seminole is extremely difficult, especially when the winds are high right there on the Atlantic Ocean. But it you know, it's the classic Donald Ross golf course, and it's right on the Atlantic Ocean, and you know, you're always going to find your tee shot. You may not like it, but it's the classic second shot golf course, and it's just such an incredible place. Every time I go down there, I brought my wife this time, and she says, "Now, why don't we live here?" And I don't have a good answer.
Well, you know, I want to get into the event itself in just a minute, but I'm glad you brought up the course itself because I heard it described the other day, and I never thought about it like this. If you go to Seminole and you are expecting to see even a typical high-end South Florida course, that's not what you're going to see. Seminole actually resembles something you might see in the Northeast, only it's transplanted down to South Florida. Does that make sense? Do you think that's a good description?
Yeah, in fact, I'd say it, for those that are listening throughout Charlotte right now, it favors Pinehurst quite a bit. I mean, it's very similar. I mean, you can immediately tell, yep, Donald Ross designed this golf course, and it reminds me a lot of number two, just with its green complexes. Now, the difference is you know, the greens are so much raised. Compared to what you would see at Pinehurst,
right.
where basically the green is at the same level as the fairway. That is not the case typically with these greens. But in terms of the fall-off and just how terrified you are of making sure you get the right speed on a putt, that you have a very similar feeling. And like a Pinehurst number two, Corin Crenshaw just came in and did some terrific work to it. You put a lot more sand on the golf course, and the green work that they did, I just think is outstanding. I'm big fans of both of them. But it does remind you of some Northeast golf, but I think even more so it reminds you of Pinehurst number two.
Taylor Zarzur with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio is our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about the pro member that went down at Seminole this past Monday. I was doing some research. The event itself dates back to 1937, and it had its roots as a big money Calcutta. Supposedly the Calcutta, and imagine this, in the 50s, got to six figures. That's real money in the 50s. And then the USGA cracked down on it. It was resurrected in 2004. And this is what really struck me. We are just 14 years removed from this event coming back. Yet I went through the names earlier. Everybody wants to play in this event. What is it about this event that gives it this prestige in only 14 years? What is the allure for the players?
Yeah, you've done a good amount of research, Charlie. Like you said, the Calcutta, they were making Hogan and Snead, and the people that were winning the event back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s were making more money doing this than they were by a wide margin than playing in a tour event. And as you can imagine, the tour and the USGA said, one or the other here, guys. And so they had to cancel the event, unfortunately. And for a number of years, they would have these little events, and they'd bring four, like, club pros in and still tried to pay tribute to, you know, professional golfers all over the country. It, certainly a lot of people were familiar with Seminole and what a great golf course it was, and the guys that live there locally that play on tour would love to go over there. But really, Bob Ford went to Tim Neer, who was the president at the time of Seminole, and said, you know, we need to just invite maybe one club pro and one member. And Tim said, the heck with that. I'm inviting Arnold Palmer. And so Bob basically got the event back going, but Tim Neer, the president at the time, who's a member at Augusta and some other prestigious places, who's still playing at Seminole now that he's retired as the president, he said, I'm bringing Arnold Palmer. And when Palmer came over in 2004, everybody else wanted to come too. And Tiger, Phil, you name it. I mean, they were playing. And Phil, until recent years, and Jimmy Dunn is his partner at Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and Jimmy's the president at Seminole now. He's been playing a lot. He played up until 2 years ago. But now that he doesn't play the Honda, he's not played the last couple of years. But you went through the rest of the list of those guys that have. And you're right. Everybody wants to play in this, but it basically was resurrected because of Bob's vision and Tim Neer inviting Arnold Palmer and everybody else following suit. And that's why you see Jack and Greg Norman and all these guys that are out there on the tee, and it's just kind of mind-boggling. But Ricky Fowler last year, after winning the Honda Classic and after having a big night, was there on the first tee at 8 o'clock the next morning, and this year Justin Thomas, after having a big night with Ricky Fowler the second straight year, was there on the first tee, you know, ready to play some golf. And a couple of years ago, Adam Scott won the Honda and Doral, and in between was there playing at Seminole. So all these guys are out there. Justin Rose and his partner Seth Wall, who has this incredible dinner the night before, he used to be the CEO of Deutsche Bank. They won it a couple times in a row. Buddy Marucci, whose story is well documented, almost beating Tiger in the U.S. Amateur. He's a member there, just an incredible man. He and Ricky have won it three times. And then this year you had Nick Watney and Sam Reeves, who's 83 years old, going on 43 years old.
Regularly breaks his age. Regularly breaks his age.
Yeah, exactly. And then Tom Wall and Daniel Berger won the Gross. Berger made 10 birdies. That is just ridiculous at a place like Seminole.
But he's getting it done.
You're right. Jason Kokrak, who's lived in Charlotte these last few years, he just moved to Cleveland, Ohio, where his wife has some family. But he didn't play the Honda, and he flew down Sunday. And he comes over to me at the party and says, "Oh, every year, my man, as long as they're going to invite me, I'm flying down here for this." And he's not playing in Mexico either. He just flew down to play at Seminole. And it's just incredible the how badly guys want to play. Johnson Wagner, who lives here in Charlotte, he plays every single year and loves it.
Yeah, I came across this fantastic quote from Davis Love, who has more than 20 tour wins, has a major, and is in a little organization we affectionately call the Hall of Fame. Listen to this quote. "I don't have many trophies on display in my house, but I do have the Seminole plaques I won." I mean, that's an incredible statement.
And by the way, his daughter went into labor on Monday, so he had to back out. And Tom Lovelady, who's an up-and-comer on the PGA Tour, who played with Davis' son Drew at Alabama, he took his spot. And Davis called Bob personally on Monday and said, "I just can't figure out a way to play and go see my daughter and go support my daughter." But he was trying. It is. And listen, if you've been there, you get it. And the Walker Cup will be there in 2021, and it'll be a perfect stage for that event. I don't know how logistically they could ever have a real significant, you know, tour event or anything, just from a parking standpoint or how they'd get people in there. But I think that's okay. It can just continue to be the best hidden gem we have in this country.
Oh, yeah, no, and I'm excited the Walker Cup is coming there to put courses like that on TV, kind of like the Walker Cup this last time was at L.A. North, and I know we're going to get to see L.A. North at the U.S. Open in a couple of years, but to put these courses that are absolute treasures on TV that people have never seen before, I think is great. Taylor Zarzer with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio is our guest taking Dead Aim. I want to talk about the membership at Seminole just for a second, because looking at some of the names on there, it's a little different from some of the high-end prestige clubs that we've brought up, you know, Augusta, Pine Valley, Cypress Point. Not that there aren't the well-heeled that are members of this club, because they are, and some of them are members at that other club. But you also have the Spider Millers of the world. You mentioned Buddy Marucci's. I mean, these are guys that are successful men, don't get me wrong, but they're not on the Forbes list.
Yeah, no, it does. It's basically the people that just have this incredible love and passion for the game. Well-accomplished guys, but also that have an incredible passion for the game of golf. And that's what Seminole is all about. It's not about anything else. The men's locker room is one of the more impressive places I've ever been. Paul Azinger, by the way, had the quote of the day on Monday, one of the guys I was talking to before he teed off. And he said, "We have more than $100 million in appearance fees playing for nothing today." And that's it. I mean, that's so true. What they really are playing for, though, Charlie, is paint on the wall. I mean, that's what Bob Ford always says, playing for some – got to get some paint on the wall. And every winner of any tournament that's ever been conducted at Seminole gets their name on the wall in the men's locker room high above – you know, like up on the ceiling almost, high on the wall, and the winners of every single pro member, the winner of the Coleman, which is one of the best amateur tournaments we have in the country every year that'll be staged in a couple of months. They have this great member event called the Ryan. Any tournament that's ever been conducted at Seminole, you get your name on the wall. And that's all these guys want. They really do. They just they want their name on the wall in one of the most prestigious locker rooms in the world. And but, no, that's the members there are – I just have so much respect for them. And Kelly Miller, who runs Pine Needles, is also a member there, and he has his name on the wall. Played with Nick Price the other day and has won in the past. But he's a huge part of what they do at Seminole. See him all the time, and obviously we're all thinking of Johnny Harris right now, just going through such a tragedy, losing his daughter Sunny just over a week ago. But he's a member, and Johnny, honestly, Johnny is responsible for the radio show that I do with Bob. We were trying to figure out who are the best club pros and or civilians, if you will, associated with the game that need their own show. And he recommended Bob Ford. So Johnny really put me together with Bob. So he's a big part of what they do down at Seminole as well. But it is such a special place. And I just can't say enough great things about it. I've been there probably, I don't know, 10 times in the last 4 years, maybe more than that. And I appreciate it more each time I go.
I'm glad you brought up the paint on the wall. I don't know how many pictures there are of this, but the next time I'm there, I'm going to snap one and just be damned if someone throws me in jail. It's a mahogany board that is in the northeast corner of the Seminole locker room. And you know this like I do. When you walk down the hall at Pinehurst, you see and feel ghosts. When you walk in the champions locker room and up in the upstairs of the clubhouse at Augusta National, you see and you feel ghosts. But when you stand in front of that mahogany board and you look up and you see Ben Hogan's name and Byron Nelson's name and Jack Nicklaus's name and Arnold Palmer's name, and the list goes on and on and on. Like you said, everyone who's ever won anything at that place. Mm-hmm. It really takes your breath away. You just stand there and the hair stands up on your arm.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because your buddy Eric Church down there with me in December, and I said, all right, man, we got to go. First tee. He said, you can't take me down here and just walk and take me through the locker room in 30 seconds, man. I got to take a look at this.
Yeah.
And he was just mesmerized, you know, by that room, and everybody is. And he's right, you're right. You know, if you ever get a chance to go there, you do. You need to spend as much time as possible just appreciating the history in that room. And you know, Eric does a very good job of smelling the roses, probably better job than I do. And but it is that room is overwhelming, and that whole place is. But one other thing I was going to tell you, Charlie, is E.F. Hutton is responsible for starting the club. One of the founders of the place back in the 20s, I guess, and he, and I can't think of her name at the moment, but you might have it in front of you, but he was I don't think he was married, but he was involved with a Palm Beach socialite, and he started this golf club, and she said, okay, you can start this club, but you got to be back by 6 o'clock because so we can go out to party. And so to this day, Seminole shuts down at 6 o'clock. I mean, you don't play any golf after that. You don't go – if you're going to have a beer, you're going to have one beer, and you're going to go home. It's not about, you know, great – it doesn't have the nicest clubhouse in the world or all these amenities. Bob Ford and others have tried to change that, and the membership says, hey, we're not about that. We got this great locker room that we want people to go in and have one drink and go home, but it's all about the golf, and that's it. And then it's time to go home, and that's – it's still to this day, that's what Seminole is all about. I'll tell you a funny story. I only share this because Bob shared it on the radio this week. But Arnold Palmer was playing there. There's no practice putting. There are no cell phones, and there's no practice putting on the greens. In fact, Bob had to disqualify someone, a prominent guy in Palm Beach, from a tournament down there for practice putting. And Bob notices a few years later, over on the second hole, that Arnold Palmer is practice putting. And Bob says to someone else, he says, hey, you got to get the hold of Arnie. He's practice putting. And the guy turns back to Bob and says, why don't you go have that conversation with him? And Bob refused to do it and said, Arnold Palmer is the only person we have never disqualified for practice putting on the green. And then a few holes later, Arnold's cell phone goes off. And he hands it to someone and says, hey, it's Kit. Say hello to Kit.
And the guy goes diving into the bushes and says, "Kit, we have to call you back," and hangs up the phone. And Arnold Palmer's the only man to get away with using his cell phone and practice putt on the ground at Seminole. So long live the king, I guess. But that place is something else. It's just all about golf, and there's a lot to be said about that, man. You forget about everything else and just go have fun with your buddies and play one of the best golf courses in the world, and can pick up on your life once you're done with the place, I guess.
He's one of my favorite people from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio. That's Taylor Zarzur. And up next, country music superstar Clay Walker takes dead aim at his 20-plus year golf addiction. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Clay Walker is a country music superstar and for almost the entirety of his career, a golf addict. Clay, I've been wanting to talk with you on this show for some time, as I don't remember ever knowing you when you were not looking to get out of talking to me so you had time to hit balls before you teed off. When did you get started in the game? Did you play growing up in Vidor?
No, I didn't play golf. I was poor. You know, I mean, I think golf was a rich man's sport. You know, so I never got a chance to really play or have learning. You know, my high school didn't offer it, for one thing. I played football, and, you know, I eat, breathe, and slept football since I was in sixth grade. And so that's all I really, the only sport I really, really liked. And later on, you know, I was on the road, and I guess my road manager at the time played a little golf and pulled out a club, and I thought, well, this can't be that hard. It's a stick and ball, you know. I mean, golly, I grew up on a ranch and walking through the woods hunting and picked up many a stick, you know, not many problems. And the first time I swung, I missed the ball, and I was like, ruh-roh. this might be a challenge.
So how long did it take before you were addicted to trying to conquer the game?
Oh, about one round.
I got you early. Clay, you've got three sons. Now, obviously, the youngest is 16 months. He doesn't play, but you've got a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old. Do either of them play yet?
Yeah, all my kids play golf. And you know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to teach them, or if you even need to teach them, but just expose them to it. And, you know, what my kids like to do is go get in the sand traps or bunkers and just play in the sand. And I'm like, hey, this works out great. I've got three of them. And my daughter's right in there, too. I got a 10-year-old boy, Will. Got a 9-year-old daughter, Mary Elizabeth. And then Eli is 5. And Ezra's 16 months, sorry. And but the three older ones get in the trap and just play like crazy. And I'll be just chipping. I'm like, this is working out great for me. If this is babysitting, I'll do it all day.
Clay Walker is our guest taking dead aim. True or false, country singers will definitely route their touring schedule based on the time of year, climate, and playing golf year-round?
100% true.
If it's snowing in January, you'd be stunned how many people are playing Arizona that time of year.
Because of this, Charlie, you know, think about this for a minute, all right? You ride this tube. You know, a bus is a tube.
Yes.
And you're on there with, you know, with 10 other guys, and you're like, when you stop, if you don't get off and do something, like this, picture it like this. The stage is a playground. When you see us on stage and you see us happy, we're not faking it. Oh, my God. It is like the biggest rush, the biggest playground ever. And all the musicians love that. I mean, but the other 23 hours, you know, of life are very difficult. So you got to find a pastime. And there's a lot worse places you can be other than the golf course. You know, that's what I tell my wife.
I got to start using that one. You know, with what you do, you've had the opportunity to play all sorts of places. I've got my personal Mount Rushmore of places that mere mortals aren't allowed to play, and I'm going to name them, and you just tell me yes or no if you've been able to get on and play.
Okay.
Seminole.
Yes.
Pine Valley.
No.
I know this one. Cypress Point.
Yes.
Augusta National.
Yes.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, let me throw in a wild card. Oakmont.
Yes.
Oh, I hate you. God almighty. Oh, God.
Now, do you really hate me?
Yeah, I'm starting to. Is there a place that you've been invited to play or asked to play, but because of scheduling or some commitment, you've had to turn down and then you pouted all the way to the gig?
Pine Valley.
You've had the opportunity and you had to walk away? Did you really consider firing the SOB who did your schedule so you couldn't go to Pine Valley? Because I would.
Yes.
Country singer Clay Walker is our guest taking Dead Aim. We'll get into your fantastic event in a second. But one place that I do get to see you play every year, and I'm so jealous, is the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. How many years have you done that now?
20-something.
Oh, my God. I didn't know you'd play that many. Wow.
Yeah, I think Huey Lewis is the only one that's been longer than me, I think. Pretty sure of that.
Clay, which was more nerve-wracking, the first time you met George Strait or the first time you met Clint Eastwood at Pebble?
Oh, man, I've never been asked that question, but both valid. I don't know. I can tell you that George immediately, you know, took off the intimidating factor by making me feel comfortable. I just had my song out, What's It to You, and it had, I think it had gone number one. And I did my first show with him, I think, in Atlanta at the Omni. And he invited me on the bus, and my knees were shaking, you know, before I went on. He said, man, I really like your new song. You know, and he was saying the words, but I wasn't hearing the words. It was one of those surreal moments, but he puts you at ease real quick. Clint Eastwood, not so much.
I've never been. Yeah. The man's 90 years old and he's Dirty Harry.
I've never been at ease around him. I'll be honest. He's probably the only celebrity that I've ever been around that I am intimidated. I'll be honest.
Wow.
And I think it's like that with everybody. You know, he golfed with, I think he played golf with Toby Keith. Toby Keith's a pretty big old boy, you know, and they were riding in the cart together, and Clint looked at Toby and said, quit staring at me. He got out of the cart and he was going to hit a ball. And I tell you something, that ought to tell you something about Clint Eastwood. I think he can still whoop a man's butt. I think he might take a swing, but he's a pretty tall guy. He's like 6'4" or 6'5". He's not mean. He's just intimidating, you know. But I love playing the AT&T, of course. I got to brag a little bit here. I won the Celebrity Shootout the last 2 years in a row, and I won the $1 million hole last year, where you hit a ball up to the seventh green, and closest to the pin, they have a playoff, and so I played against, you know, all the athletes like Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, Alex Smith, Larry Fitzgerald, and it came down to a playoff between me and Larry Fitzgerald, and it was on CBS, you know, it was on TV, and I could see Larry Fitzgerald's vein in his neck throbbing. I thought, he is fixing to air mail this. He was so jacked up. He hits it. It looks like it's going to fly right in the hole, and it flew the entire green, and I thought, okay, all I got to do is get it on the green. No pressure. So I hit it up there and win $50,000 for a charity. So it was great.
Well, just a little FYI for you. That means that I've had the winner of that shootout for the last 3 years on this show in the last 2 months, because Colt Ford was on, and he won 2 years ago and then won this year, and now you've won. So I've got that event absolutely covered. Hey, take me inside for a second. First off, how does one get invited to be a celebrity at the AT&T?
Ancient Chinese secret.
All right, we will not reveal that secret. How about this one? This one's easier. Who have been some of your partners over the years?
I've had some great ones. I've had Webb Simpson. I've had Aaron Baddeley. I've had Steve Elkington. Jeff Maggard. Golly, the Walrus. It's been so many. It's been so fun, you know, that, but I really have enjoyed the last few years. I played with this young player named Kelly Kraft.
Yeah.
And, he and Jordan Spieth are great, great friends. And so I've played some rounds with those guys, practice rounds. And Jordan is the coolest. I'll tell you something. For someone his age, I mean, you know, he's in his early 20s. He is a man, and you know, I wish I had that much sense when I was his age. But he is really a really heartfelt guy, and showed me some things, you know, around the greens that, unsolicited. You know, just if he would see something, he'd come over and say, "Hey, why don't you try this?" And it worked. You know, so the friendships that are formed, you know, or can be formed around golf, are lifelong most of the time, because you can play the sport, you know, until you die, and you can be pretty decent at it, you know, even up in age. So I think that it's a game that men and women alike, you know, that they see that there's a long future in it, so it's worth investing in.
How many times have you made the cut?
That's another story. I'm not happy about that, but only once out of 20-something years, you know, 22 years.
Well, at least you're not Jack Lemmon. I mean, you made the cut, man.
No, but I'll tell you what was so cool about it. I made it the year I met my wife, and I said, okay, you're the one.
Oh, that's classic.
I kiss her under that umbrella all the time. I'll pick that umbrella up when we walk into the garage. I'll pick it up. I'll say, look at this, sweetheart. You're my lucky charm.
Country music superstar Clay Walker is our guest taking Dead Aim. We talked about Clint. Other than him, who is one celebrity? And I mean, it's kind of interesting to me because there's so many celebrities there, but who's the one celebrity that you met or came into contact with that you couldn't wait to get home and say, oh, I met this guy?
Bill Murray, by far.
Was he cool?
Bill Murray is the funniest and the coolest. We went and had drinks afterwards. We played him. Well, actually, one year, like, I've won the celebrity shootout, I think, four times. And once with Michael Moulton, once with Bill Murray, then with Carlton off of Fresh Prince.
Oh, Alfonso Rivera, yeah.
This year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alfonso Rivera. So I've won it four times, and Bill Murray was by far the funnest. And we played a practice round together. We had some lunch together, and just... It's painful. It hurts to be around him. You laugh so hard. Literally, I felt like I broke a rib when I got done with lunch with him. I couldn't hardly take it. And guy, he has a sweet swing there. I mean, he's got a really beautiful fluid swing. So, but all the celebrities there, I will tell you, you know, this is a known thing. They don't care who you are. They don't care how much money you've made. They don't care how famous you are. You step out of line there, you're never coming back. And that, I think that comes from the man down, and his name's Clint Eastwood.
Respond to this statement. All singers want to be athletes, and all athletes want to be singers.
They can't.
Get you out of here on this. Look, in the mid-90s, you were diagnosed with MS. You have a great tournament that you put on every year at Pebble. First off, before we talk about the tournament, are you able to do it this year? Because I know the Open's held there in June, and you usually hold the Band Against US MS tournament in June. Are you doing it there?
We are, and we've kind of held off just to surprise everybody. But yes, we're playing our golf tournament right on the heels of the US Open at Pebble Beach. And I haven't told a lot of people this, but I've been named the entertainment chairman for the U.S. Open, for the 100th U.S. Open here at Pebble Beach this year.
Well, that is awesome.
So, yes, I would love to invite people out, too. So it is invitation only, but if you will call Pebble Beach and let them know that you want to be in my tournament, that you heard it on Charlie's show, I will make sure that you get in. How about?
How great is that? Who all do you get to come out and help you? I know it's probably a changing cast of characters this year, but you got a lot of friends. Who do you expect to be with you this summer?
You know, we have some invitations out to some celebrities, but just to name a few that have come recently, Jeff Foxworthy was probably my favorite, and he made me cry laughing. Great guy, a lot of athletes. Basketball players, football players. There's just a plethora. You know, I think that this will probably be our biggest year for celebrities because of it being, you know, so close to the U.S. Open. And a lot of those guys love, you know, challenges. So the course, they're telling me that they're going to keep the course in a really challenging condition for the for us as well. But obviously, it's mostly amateurs out there, or it is pretty much all amateurs. But I will say this is probably going to be about 20 spots open. So if you're interested in playing, just tell them you want to play in Clay Walker's Band Against MS tournament, or just say Clay Walker's tournament, Charity Classic. And I love Charlie, you need to come out there. You just got to see it. It's a phenomenal time. We play Spyglass, Spanish Bay, and we play Pebble Beach, of course. And we play Spanish Bay the second day, and everyone wears knickers. So it's a sight. And people stop traffic down 17-mile drive, you know, down the Ocean Drive there for miles. And people just stop and just take pictures standing out there. And it's just cool. I'm proud of it. And it raises money for multiple sclerosis, which I was diagnosed with MS 23 years ago, if you can believe that, and I'm doing great.
So there you go. Just call Pebble and get in Clay's tournament in June. That's country music superstar Clay Walker. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for his time and insight this week, and I hope you enjoyed the encore conversation with Taylor Zarzer about the season's first unofficial major, the Seminole Pro Member. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts. It will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Hey, before we get out of here this week, I wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the passing on Thursday of the legendary golf writer, sports writer, author, and hilarious raconteur, the great Dan Jenkins. I don't know how long his Twitter account will be up, so check it out now if you can. It's at Dan Jenkins GD, and just enjoy his brilliance. I found a tweet during the PGA Championship last summer from him, and I wanted to share it with you now. I just figured out that I've spent almost 5 years of my life just covering majors. If you count the other tournaments, that's another 5 or 6 years. And then there's the football and the ski racing. Most of the time, it never felt like work. Guess what? I'd have paid them to do it. If when your time comes, that's the way you feel about what you do, then you've lived a life in full. Hey, weather-wise, well, looks like it's going to be a sloppy go of it at best, but if somehow you do find a way to put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass this weekend. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.